We continue with an amazing woman. And by the way, our old friend Rick Kempfer. Let me tell you something about Rick. Rick got out of radio at just the right time. And Rick bailed on radio, and he's one of the great producers of all time. And he said to me, yeah, I'm going to start a publishing company. And I said, Rick, you're an idiot. And he's built this publishing company up to, well, you're like Stephen King. You're putting out a book every 15 minutes.
Yeah, seems like it. We've got over 50 books now.
God bless you, man. That's a good story.
Thanks.
And at any point in your life, you know, working with some of the greats in this business, did you ever go, you know, someday I'm going to be a book publisher?
No, it never occurred to me.
Yeah, well, you're doing great.
One of those things.
You know what? I'm going to make you introduce our guest. Who's here?
Okay, well, sitting next to me is the latest author in the Eckhart's Press stable. This is Janet Sutherland Madden, who has a great new book that's coming out next week called Nose Over Toes.
And the cover is, we just gave it to you, Steve.
Yeah.
It's that's a fun picture of you there. That's,
yeah, thanks.
She's leaned back in a chair with her feet up.
Mm-hmm. I was just goofing around because, yeah, you know, you got to.
Well, let's tell your story.
You got a cane.
Let's go back to 2004.
Yeah.
You got a dog named Bogey?
Well, Bogey, yeah.
Well, what?
Well, Bogey was my dog's name.
Yeah, yeah.
Bogey's no longer with us. Is that
you
what
know?
We're...
You and I have met.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah,
radio biz. But what happened was in 2004, I suffered a ruptured brain aneurysm. But this is back when I no longer worked in Chicago as a reporter. I moved back to Columbus, Ohio, and I was walking my dog Bogey. And
typical warning.
Yeah, typical warning.
Right? You're just out and planning on walk the dog, have an aneurysm.
Right.
And an aneurysm, we should explain to people again, it's a rupture in a blood vessel, right?
Right. And, okay. And let's not get confused with a stroke, because aneurysm is like, let's think of a balloon. Mm-hmm. It's like a bubble in your brain, mm-hmm, and it ruptures, meaning it explodes. And literally for a couple months, I was popping aspirin, and it was like an ongoing joke. I'm like, look, I can pop three at once. And my receptionist, I was in sales at the time, was
right,
like, you know, that's not normal. I'm like, well, I have a headache, sinus headache. You know, this was like March where everyone's coming off the winter time.
And it's also 2004. Nobody was talking about the fact that you can take a baby aspirin, but you can't take 47 aspirin in a single day.
Right.
You know, I mean, you didn't know.
Right, right. So I'm, you know, I was on antibiotics and I had headaches along with the, sure, sinusitis thing. And the GP never thought, maybe we should do a CT scan, because no one really thought, oh, she might have a brain aneurysm. Mm-hmm. So I was popping these aspirin, had a constant headache. I was taking these aspirin for like 3 months straight. Normal, just a headache, constant. And then my eye was flickering also.
This is all prior to the aneurysm.
This is all prior to the rupture.
Yeah.
And I never mentioned that to anyone because I just thought, headache, eye flicker, maybe I'm tired. Because you know when your eye flickers,
sure,
occasionally.
People have that all the time.
So I thought, whatever. So I'm walking Bogey, slipped out of work, walking Bogey, and I thought, oh, I've got this worst headache ever. I called my mom in Glen Ellen, and I said, hey, I got this worst headache ever. She goes, you're having a stroke. And I thought, $50 copay. I'm not paying $50 copay in the ER.
Because that's what occurs to you at a time like that. Because people think of stuff like that.
But
you're talking about a cluster headache, like the instant on worst headache
ever had.
Which, by the way, is one of those warning signs for
a
stroke.
It's a trigger.
But it's also, more importantly, a warning sign that you are about to have a rupture.
And I talked to the paramedic who treated me, and he said, you know what, we heard on the scan that said the worst headache ever had, and they were trained, that's a ruptured brain aneurysm.
Right.
So they went through training, and they said, that's a ruptured brain aneurysm. So,
but you were conscious enough to call 911.
I was conscious enough to call 911, and I heard the tape, and I was just, it was very alarming, because clearly it was one of the worst headaches I've ever had.
Did you collapse, or were you conscious the entire time when they came to get you?
I was in the kitchen, and I collapsed,
okay,
and I started to have seizures.
Sure.
This I all gathered from being a reporter, gathered from the EMT, and he said you were convulsing and all this kind of stuff. And
it's impressive you were able to call. Is it the headache was the worst headache when it got to the point where the rupture happened, or all day leading up to it, was it a slow build headache? I'm just
instant
is it an instant? Is
it
an
instant
eruption
on? Okay. Where I could hear the screaming that I've never screamed before. Where I was like, it was really upsetting.
And it's just you and your dog, right?
It was me and the dog and my parents. I had hung up with my mom, and I was like, the worst headache I've ever had.
Yeah, you think you're gonna die?
You know, and I thought I was gonna die. Sure. And but I said worst headache on my planet. My friends all heard it. They go, oh, narcissist. Of course you.
My planet. Worst headache on my planet. You're the people who are just living here.
Of course, Janet. So, so anyway.
So, how much do you remember? Do you remember getting into the ambulance or being put in the ambulance?
But I do remember what the neurosurgeon whispered in my ear, and he said, "Be brave," because later, after a visit, he whispered in my ear, "Be brave," and I went, did you say that to me one time?" He said, "Yeah, I say that to all the patients, like before a surgery." And I was like, "How weird that you can like trigger
the things that stick."
Yeah. Things that stick. So,
As I understand the story, you had a 3% chance to live.
3% chance to live, but they didn't tell my parents that.
Good.
They told one of my friends that who lived in Ohio, and luckily my parents, you know, just hopped on a plane and flew to Columbus, and my friends were standing there, and they just were like, oh my, you know, she's not going to make it, oh my God, and you know, that kind of a thing.
Well, using a cane, you know, that's all about style, but how long did it take you to get function back, basic function?
I want to say 4 months.
That's pretty fast, considering what happened to you.
Well, I worked in radio, and I remember saying, all right, can we get this done in like 30 seconds?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, before the spot's done. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So, and they were like, you're doing things too fast, you're walking too fast, you're talking kind of fast. And yeah, whatever. Anyway, let's
go. All right, so we're 15 years, and by the way, this is all laid out in the book, Nose Over Toes. Where's the camera in here? It's a different studio. Nose Over Toes, Janet Sutherland Madden. And
well, and I think it's important to distinguish that you had the aneurysm on one side, and depending on what side it happens, it depends what it affects. Yours affected more physical.
On the right side.
But if it had been on the left side,
it would have affected my cognitive and my ability to talk and all that kind of stuff.
So, well, yeah, it's an interesting way to describe luck, right? Oh, I'm so lucky I had that aneurysm over here.
Well, I did have an aneurysm on the left side, and when I found out it would affect my speech and my cognitive, I was like, could we get it fixed? Like, ASAP, because right. I got stuff to do.
And we should say, because I'm using the terminology wrong, and most people do it this way. We all have aneurysms in our body, right? We just don't want them to rupture. When they rupture, and by that I mean they're blood vessels that have, you know, weaker areas or whatever. It's just when those weak areas get to a certain point that they rupture. A ruptured aneurysm is the problem.
1 in 50 people have brain aneurysms.
Yeah. Aren't you lucky? Look at you.
I could. They think I could have been born with a brain
aneurysm. Is that right?
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of time. Tick tock.
Everyone
tick-tock.
Could have a brain aneurysm,
including me. I mean, you know,
yes.
I got a lot to do today.
Yes.
All right. So, what do you want people to know about your experience? Because I think your book is such a good idea for survivors, in particular, and people maybe that have just gone through this.
Well, 1 in 50 people have brain aneurysms, and if you heard that Grandma dropped of a stroke, well, what did she drop? Did she drop of a stroke, or how did she die? Did your sister, you know, did family, how did a family member die? You know, I'm adopted,
mm-hmm.
and it turns out that my birth mom dropped at 40. What does that mean?
Did you know that information?
Well, interesting.
Because we talked about this back
in
the day.
I had the adoption agency contacted her and said, you know, what do you have in your background health-wise? And they say the birth moms will drop, will not, you can't keep them on the phone very long. So I said, hit her with these certain items quickly.
Yeah.
And they hit her with stroke and this and that. She goes, no, no cancer. Well, every woman at 40 dropped of a stroke.
Not so much.
that's more than likely a brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're kind of thinking that was more than likely a brain aneurysm.
Well, is there a hereditary component to it?
Yes.
Oh, there is?
Yes.
So if your mom had it, your dad, whatever, there's a much better chance you're going to have it.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's really important.
Right. It's women are more likely than men to have brain aneurysms. African Americans are more likely to rupture than white women.
Really?
Latinos are more likely to rupture than white women. So these are statistics that are important to know. We had a walk one day, and you would be shocked at the groups of
the diversity.
The diversity.
Yeah.
I was just like, hey, can we get a stat out of diversity? Because it was just shocking. I'm thinking maybe because it's just Chicago, you know?
Right, right.
No, it was literally, they said, no, it was African Americans are more likely to rupture than Caucasian. It was Hispanics are more likely to rupture than than
so you
Caucasians.
Had a United Nations meeting of aneurysm patients.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it can be a point being.
And I asked. I asked why I wasn't. And it was hypertension.
Okay.
Oh. Okay. So, you know, that's an interesting, you know.
So that's a tie. If you're
that's a tie right there, you know.
Well, ruptured aneurysms don't care is your point, right? Anybody can get it at any time. Know your family history if you can and,
right.
you know, get the appropriate medical attention.
Right.
Well, talk about you. How are you doing now?
Doing great.
You look fabulous.
I mean, I'm doing great, yeah.
Getting around, doing fun.
Getting around, have, you know, got married.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
I saw that, Miss Hyphen.
That's exciting. My husband's a nurse, which is kind of...
Was he taking care of you? Is that how you met him?
What?
Was he taking care of you? Is that how you met him?
No, we met because his brother saw one of my interviews about brain aneurysms, and he said, isn't that interesting? Because our parents both had aneurysm-related illnesses, and so he got in contact with me, and we started talking, and then we all met. Aww. And so his family had brain, both died, his mom and dad both had, well, his father had a stroke, and his mom died of a brain aneurysm.
Well, obviously, he's got some sensitivity to the area.
Yes, and so we both kind of lobby and do fundraise
for
brain
you.
Aneurysms.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Before we run out of time, I'd like to get your publisher in here to tell us why we should go out and get the book. Rick, what struck you about the story?
Well, to me, it's a tale for anybody who's a survivor. I have a bunch of friends in my family that have gone through this. And when you're struggling to come through it like she has, just the idea that there's somebody who 15 years later is walking and talking and doing a great job, unbelievable inspiration.
Rock star.
Yeah.
Look at you. Yeah. And you know what I say to them like this? I say, get two copies. Maybe a third.
I know you've had a brain aneurysm, but Steve's had a cold for 18 days.
So. Yeah, this is my 18th day, held hostage by my cough. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On the marriage and the book.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's a big deal. So it's great that you're out there doing this. So I tell you, life takes you in funny directions, doesn't it?
And I should say that my dad, part of the book is my dad's journal. My dad kept a journal. Actually, my dad carries a notebook in his used to carry a notebook.
Sure.
And he carried a notebook and kept a journal while I was in the hospital. From the moment they got a phone call, he started writing a journal. And so the journal starts with the book starts with his journal.
Oh, I like that. Oh, that's pretty good. Man. Good man, good dad.
Yeah, unfortunately, he died June of last year, but he kept saying to me, I kept a journal. And I'm like, why? He said, because you missed a lot. Well, I missed J-Lo, married.
Oh, what a good dad. You know what? Honestly, J-Lo gets married a lot. So, you know, it just keeps to be happening over and over again.
But I literally missed a lot. And so one day I went on his computer. I'm like, what could possibly? And I was really shocked at, like, infections I had and all these other things.
Oh, what a
things.
Cool way to be able to tell the story
to
your
dad. Yeah, so I integrated his journal in there. And unfortunately, he did not... He has not seen this because he died of cancer last year. And I said to him, hey, Dad, we're going to write this book. He goes, oh, you sure I want to tweak it? I'm like, I'm tweaking.
There's no tweaking.
Your journal.
I'm writing your book.
So I said, hey, give me your foreword. So he's in the hospital, and he dictates the foreword.
Oh, that's great.
And he wrote the foreword.
That's great.
And then Chet wrote the epilogue, Chet Coppock.
Yeah.
Because my dad was a huge baseball fan, and my dad actually was at the Gary Railcats with Chet. Chet was doing some brain aneurysm fundraising.
Well, as Rick will tell you, Chet's got a good heart.
Yeah, and I was complaining because it was right along the Lake Michigan, and it was cold. And I was like, this is boring. He's like, kid, it's great. Look at your old man. He's taking notes. I go, I'm freezing. I need some hot chocolate.
Right.
He's like, I'll get you some hot chocolate. Look at your old man. He's enjoying this. I'm like, this is terrible. You know, we're laughing. But he really enjoyed it. And he goes, look at your dad.
It's a great time.
It was a great time.
And those are great memories.
Yeah, it was great memories. And, you know, and so Chet wrote the epilogue.
Nose over toes.
And you know where that comes from? That's how you learn how to stand up from a chair.
Yep.
And my mom has taught all of her friends how to, you know, if they're in a wheelchair or a walker.
Well, everybody's got to celebrate
your life.
So they
all do that now.
Celebrate your life and celebrate your story. Janet Sutherland Madden, Nose Over Toes. Get it wherever I buy books. But
EckhartsPress.com.
Yeah. How do I spell that?
Also, NoseOverToes.com.
Okay. And how do I spell Eckhart's?
Eckhartz.
Thank you, sir.